Nemoto presents classical music giants. Maurice Ravel, The Alchemist of Color. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Christopher voice. Running time, approximately 11 minutes. A hush falls over the Paris Concert Hall in 1928. On stage, a small, sharp-featured man adjusts his cuffs. He is impeccably dressed with a precision that seems almost mechanical, every gesture neat, every line exact. The baton rises. A steady pulse begins in the snare drum, soft, persistent, hypnotic. A simple theme snakes its way through the orchestra, repeating again and again, climbing in volume and texture until the roof nearly lifts from its foundations. The piece is called Bolero and the man is Maurice Ravel. By the time the final chord crashes into silence, the audience is divided. Some cheer wildly, others hiss and boo, unable to decide if they have heard genius or a practical joke. This moment crystallizes so much about Ravel. The precision, the daring, the refusal to compromise, the sly sense of humor. He was called the Swiss watchmaker of music for his fastidious craftsmanship, yet his works pulse with human emotion. He was a modernist who loved the past, a cosmopolitan who celebrated folk roots, a man who longed for recognition but bristled at the labels society tried to pin on him. Today we step into the kaleidoscopic world of Maurice Ravel, a composer whose small body of work left an outsized mark on 20th century music. Ravel was born in 1875 in the Basque town of Cibouer, just a stone's throw from the Spanish border. His father, Joseph Ravel, was an inventive Swiss engineer with a gift for mechanics. His mother, Marie Delawort, was Basque and steeped in the rhythms, dances, and stories of her people. From this union, young Maurice inherited both precision and passion, a mechanical mind and a heart tuned to folk song. The family moved soon after to Paris, where Ravel grew up amid the hum of the Belle Epoque. He began piano lessons at 7 and showed a stubborn streak early on. He wasn't the kind of prodigy who dazzled audiences at 10. Instead, he was deliberate, methodical, always more concerned with perfection than speed. At 14, he entered the Paris Conservatoire, the hallowed training ground for French musicians. There he studied piano, counterpoint, and composition, absorbing the influence of Gabriel Fauré, his teacher and lifelong mentor. Fauré encouraged him to pursue clarity, elegance, and balance, the hallmarks of French style. Yet even in his student works, Ravel showed an independence that irked the establishment. The conservatoire prized conformity. Students were expected to compose in the approved styles, to win the prestigious Prix de Rome competition, and to reinforce the academic ideals of French art. Ravel resisted. He entered the Prix de Rome 5 times and failed each one. Critics whispered that he was deliberately provoking the judges with harmonies too daring, structures too unconventional. In 1905, after yet another rejection, the scandal reached national proportions, the so-called Affaire Ravel. Newspapers accused the conservatoire of corruption and favoritism. The uproar forced the resignation of its director. Ironically, the failure that denied Ravel the official stamp of approval also freed him from institutional chains. He became, in the public eye, a rebellious outsider, a role he relished. Ravel's early works reveal his fascination with detail. Unlike Beethoven or Mahler, who built towering symphonic cathedrals, Ravel preferred intimate forms, carefully polished like jewels. His Judo, 1901, captures Waters' playfulness in shimmering arpeggios. His string quartet in F major, 1903, is taut, balanced, and perfectly proportioned, so much so that Debussy, already a rising star, praised it even while noting its kinship to his own quartet. Ravel never wrote quickly. He would labor over a phrase for weeks, chiseling until every note fit. He once compared composing to embroidery, each stitch precise. Friends joked he was less a composer than a craftsman of music boxes. Yet his miniatures carry extraordinary richness. Exotic scales, jazz-like syncopations, echoes of Spanish flamenco, and medieval modes all coexisting in luminous textures. No story of Ravel is complete without Claude Debussy. Both were French, both revolutionized harmony, both drew on impressionism and symbolism in art. Critics often lumped them together, much to Ravel's irritation. Debussy was sensuous, elusive, inclined toward fluid forms. Ravel was sharper, more classical in outline, but equally daring. their relationship veered between admiration and rivalry. Ravel promoted Debussy's works early on, but later bristled at suggestions that he was merely Debussy's follower. In truth, they were parallel explorers sailing different routes to the same new continent of sound. Exoticism and Spain. Though French by upbringing, Ravel's Basque heritage kept Spain close to his heart. Spanish rhythms haunt his catalog, from the Rhapsody Español to Bolero. He adored flamenco, castanets, and guitar-like effects on the piano. Yet his Spain was often a dreamland, a Spain imagined from across the border, filtered through nostalgia and art. This fascination culminated in Bolero, 1928. Originally commissioned as a ballet, it consists of a single theme repeated obsessively, orchestrated with growing intensity. To some, it was monotonous, to others, hypnotic. Ravel himself described it as 17 minutes of orchestral tissue without music, a provocative challenge to listeners. Yet audiences couldn't resist its steady crescendo. Bolero remains one of the most performed pieces in classical repertoire, a paradoxical triumph for a man who claimed it wasn't really music at all. Ravel's ballets form another cornerstone of his output. In 1912, he produced Daphnis et Chloe, a lush, hour-long ballet for Sergei Diaghilev's ballets Russes. With its shimmering dawn chorus, pastoral dances, and sweeping climaxes, it is often hailed as his masterpiece. Stravinsky, no easy man to impress, called it one of the most beautiful products of French music. Ravel also created smaller ballets like Ma Mère Eloy, Mother Goose, originally written as a suite for piano four hands for two children he adored. Later orchestrated, it retains a fairy tale delicacy, gentle, enchanting, filled with wonder. The outbreak of World War I in 1914 cut through Ravel's world. Though too small and frail for frontline combat, he insisted on serving and became a truck driver, ferrying supplies to the front. The horrors he witnessed left a deep scar. When his beloved mother died in 1917, his grief was overwhelming. His post-war works bear the shadow of this trauma. The Le Tombeau de Couperin, 1917, honors friends lost in battle, yet cloaks mourning in the form of a Baroque dance suite. It is both elegy and act of survival, a testament to resilience through form. Jazz, America, and the 1920s. In the 1920s, Ravel's music absorbed new influences. He toured the United States, where he was hailed as a celebrity. He met George Gershwin, who famously asked Ravel for composition lessons. Ravel declined, warning that it would risk turning a great songwriter into a mediocre imitator of French style. Yet Ravel himself admired jazz, its syncopation, its vitality. Works like the Piano Concerto in G Major sparkle with jazz harmonies, blues inflections, and playful rhythms, all filtered through his meticulous craft. The slow movement of that concerto, long, singing, and heartbreakingly simple, is among the most haunting things he ever wrote. By the 1930s, Ravel's health declined. He suffered from a neurological disease, possibly aphasia or Alzheimer's, that gradually robbed him of speech and the ability to write music. His mind remained active, but he could no longer translate ideas into notes. He lived in Montfort-l'Amaury, near Paris, in a house filled with mechanical toys, clocks, and gadgets. Visitors described him as charming yet increasingly withdrawn, trapped inside his own silence. In 1937, after a failed brain surgery, Maurice Ravel died at the age of 62. His output is small compared to many giants. No symphonies, only a handful of chamber works, a few piano concertos, and some orchestral scores. Yet every piece is a gem crafted with unmatched care. Ravel's legacy lies in his precision, his clarity, his ability to fuse old and new. He was not a revolutionary in the sense of breaking everything apart, but rather a master synthesizer. He absorbed folk song, Baroque dances, jazz rhythms, and modern harmonies, and distilled them into a style that feels timeless. He resisted being labeled impressionist, symbolist, or anything else. He simply sought perfection, though he knew perfection was impossible. In his own words, "My objective is technical perfection. I can only strive for it. In that lies the real meaning of my work." Today, his music is everywhere. In concert halls, ballets, films, even ice skating routines. Bolero, though not his favorite, became an unlikely anthem of sensuality and obsession. His piano works remain benchmarks of delicacy and control. His orchestrations, especially his arrangement of Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition, set standards that orchestras still measure against. Reflection. Ravel's life embodies the paradox of modern art, the longing for beauty in an age of machines, the search for intimacy in a world of war. He was meticulous but never cold, precise but never sterile. Like a clockmaker, he built intricate mechanisms. Like a poet, he filled them with breath. When we hear Ravel, we hear more than France or Spain or jazz. We hear the fragile thread of humanity stitched through time, holding together grief and joy, tradition and invention, silence and song.